Welcome to All Analytics Radio. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. You know, more than half of the population on this earth lives in cities these days. And even if you live outside a city, there's a good chance that you might be among the commuters and tourists who double the size of many cities almost every day. So cities matter to most of us. They're sort of central to our lives, you know, whether it's where we work, where we live, or, you know, which baseball or football team we follow. For those cities have challenges. For some it's, you know, traffic congestion and crime. In others, the problems are more extreme in the form of, you know, those two plus, you know, widespread hunger, homelessness, and disease. Therefore, government leaders are increasingly looking at what technology can do as a solution for some of their problems in the creation of smart cities. Our guest today is Tim Herbert, who is Senior Vice President of Research and Market Intelligence for the Computing Technology Industry Association, also known as CompTIA. Tim recently released research on the state of smart cities, and in particular, the interest that city leaders are showing on smart city concepts using ideas such as the Internet of Things. Welcome to A2 Radio, Tim. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay, before we get into the actual discussion, let me add a couple of notes for you listeners. You can post questions for Tim and comments for your peers in the audience on the live chat box on the All Analytics streaming audio page. I'll share as many questions as I can with our guests during the live audio session, and then we'll address a few more during the chat session at the bottom of the hour. So, Tim, I know CompTIA represents suppliers of computing technology. What was your goal in doing this research, and what are some of the key things that you learned?
Yes, CompTIA, we are a not-for-profit trade association, and we certainly do represent the creators and the suppliers of technology. But we also represent technology professionals, and technology professionals can be found in every industry across our economy, as well as certainly employed by the government itself. And part of our mission is really to help facilitate the use of technology. So we work with many partners, including government agencies, including the education sector and others. And the smart cities research this year, it was an extension of our Internet of Things research. And we've been conducting IoT research for many years now. And we felt that smart cities, while it falls under the umbrella of Internet of Things, it really deserved its own attention. And having some additional data from government respondents allowed us to really understand and to quantify some of the factors that are driving the market, what could be inhibiting the market. And we really, it's part of our overarching research program, and we publish maybe 25 research studies per year. And we really view this as an attempt to further the understanding of this emerging market. There's a lot going on with it, and I'm sure we'll cover a lot of it on the show today.
Is it safe to say we're still in the very early stages of adding intelligence to city services?
Yeah, we are definitely in probably the what would be the equivalent of the startup phase. Based on our research, we did confirm that there are probably right around 1 in 10 cities that they have projects, formal smart city projects underway. And then there's probably another 25% that they may be experimenting. It may be a pilot project. It may be a partnership with a local university to test a proof of concept. But certainly the awareness is there, though. I attended a smart cities conference last month. A lot of city leaders and mayors and others. And there's a lot of interest. There's a lot of discussion. But many city leaders are still in the fact-finding phase, so they want to understand some of the different examples out there, some of the different ways that smart city technologies could affect their problems. But it's going to definitely take some time, though, for some of these elements to come together before we move on to the next phases of adoption.
Those cities that are implementing IoT and other technologies, towards, you know, the goal of smart city? Are they pretty much, let's say, standalone applications now or pilot applications, or have people really started integrating multiple applications?
Well, that is one of the challenges. The concept of smart city, it has really become almost a catch-all for applying technology to a lot of different city problems. And in some cases, we would probably consider it a fairly modest endeavor, such as moving a paper-based process onto the city's website. And some would argue that that technically is not a smart city type of application. And then others are much further along, where they may be deploying new types of sensors. They may be integrating different data streams. They may be using more advanced analytics. There may be a automation component to it. And it's really this entire continuum of examples. But there, it appears most of the examples, I will say, in the pilot phase, usually a city will pick one particular area to focus on, and the integration is fairly limited. So if they want to start with, say, smart parking meters, or they want to upgrade their street lighting in a particular neighborhood, which may include, in addition to motion sensors, there may be also environmental sensors to gauge the types of particulates in the air at that moment. But they're not quite at the point yet of, say, integrating that with weather systems and health-related systems. So most of these are still standalone at this point.
One thing that struck me as we were preparing for this is just the scope of a smart city project. Well, even a single application, you know, when you talk about some of the big distressed cities around the world, you know, one application could have an impact on the lives of millions of people. And, you know, what kind of, I won't say order of magnitude, what kind of scale is there beyond that if now you've got two or three applications that are in production? Do you get a sense that anybody is really trying to do a portfolio of applications, even if it's maybe a few years down the road?
Yeah, I think you're certainly going to see a number of different models. Some of the larger, very prominent tech vendors, they may be in a position to offer a more end-to-end, where they have the capacity to deploy sensors and some of the specialty technologies in areas such as transportation, in energy management, in public safety, and they also have the capacity then to manage the data and the analytics on the back end. But we also know there will be a expansive ecosystem of smaller niche players. And think about on the Internet of Things side, just how many new companies have essentially sprung up in the past 2 years to focus on one specific problem or one specific area. And yeah, that will be certainly one of the challenges that many city leaders face. They will have to balance some of the pros and cons between going with a single vendor or piecing together many smaller vendors, especially when you think about systems that have to interact with other systems. You do get into some of the challenges involving interoperability. And that's another area that we'll probably we probably need to move a little bit further along in resolving some of those issues. No city leader wants to make an investment that could affect their city for 50 or 100 years and risk potentially getting locked into one technology that doesn't have the capacity to interact with other technologies. So certainly that is a major concern. But to your point about some of these mega cities and how complex they are and how many different variables and how many different citizens' lives could be affected, it is a pretty significant undertaking. And I think that's why it's so important at this stage. And there's quite a few mechanisms to do this, but sharing of best practices and sharing of information. There are a number of associations and organizations that serve mayors and city leadership and states. But the more that we can ensure that some of the information that is being garnered from the pilots and the experiments underway right now, the better off cities that are just reaching that point will be.
Now I've seen over the past few years, like 3 or 4 years, that there seems to be a pretty good infrastructure of information sharing that's developing out there, particularly among the bigger cities.
I mean, certainly being infrastructure, I with drivers, there's a number of factors that are coming together to make the timing almost perfect for the smart city to continue. And certainly aging infrastructure is one. We have growing population density. We have aging populations. We have environmental factors. But certainly cities that they have to make those investments. I live right outside of Washington, D.C. in Alexandria, Virginia, and we have a serious problem with rainwater runoff that is dumping massive amounts of sewage into the Potomac River. And it's just because the system is 100 years old. It needs to be replaced. But now is really the time to be thinking about how can we future-proof it? What are some of the ways that we can incorporate sensors to have better real-time data to understand what water flows are, and what can we do in terms of the analytics to ensure that it's optimized? And granted, this is not all going to come together in the short term, but city planners, as long as they are thinking about what is possible today, and then what how that may impact them over the next 10, 20, 30 years, that's pretty important. One of the refrains at the Smart Cities Conference that I just attended, you heard quite a bit, think big, act small. And it was really encouraging cities to be thinking about all of these different components and all of the different ways it may affect your citizens. But realistically, it's best to start on a smaller scale.
What have you seen that you just walked away from either a presentation or something you read where you just said, hey, that's cool?
What I find pretty fascinating right now, some of the mechanisms that can better tap in to citizen data, and these could be there's a pilot underway in Portland, Oregon, where they have added sensors to the bike sharing program that they have. And these sensors are collecting environmental data. They are collecting noise data. They are monitoring traffic flows. And there's a number of initiatives underway in Europe as well. There's a 14-nation consortium. But I think it's really interesting, these hybrid approaches where you're relying on the citizens to supply data and giving them opportunities to really engage with local government to provide data on everything, on how they're living, and then providing some of the mechanisms to aggregate that data and to act on it. But I think it's just great for interactions between cities and governments.
What type of challenges lie ahead? Let's start on the technology side first, and then we'll get into the social government type of challenges. But in terms of technology, what has to happen?
As I alluded to earlier, certainly we need to make progress in terms of interoperability. There are still now many different groups with competing standards. There has been some consolidation. Some of these different consortiums of technology companies, they are starting to come together and agree to ensure that their systems will talk to one another. So we have to make progress on that front. We have to ensure that we have a better understanding of integration. We have to have a better understanding, you know, systems that they may work fine in a one-year pilot. How does that play out over 10 years exposed to the elements? So we will continue to need better research and just more real-world testing of some of these systems. And then certainly the ongoing maintenance as well. Who's going to be able to go out into the field? If something needs to be, requires troubleshooting or a set needs to be replaced, who's going to do that? Is that city staff? Is it contracts with managed service providers, some combination of both? In the backdrop is always the topic of cybersecurity. And there have also already been a few alarming examples of infrastructure that has been hacked. There was an example earlier this year in, I can't remember the exact city, but in Ukraine, someone hacked into the energy grid and they turned the power off for 250,000 homes, went black. And we've had these types of examples in the U.S. as well. So certainly there's a lot of focus right now on the security front, both in terms of building security in at the ground level, so the companies that are developing these technologies, ensuring that we are encrypting data, so data that is being, say, transferred from remote sensors, everything is encrypted. So there's also a lot that needs to happen on the security and the data front for us to progress. Again, where we are now in the pilot stage, things are probably about where they should be. But if we are going to roll this out on a large scale, certainly we need to make some progress in these areas.
I can only imagine where they pointed the finger of blame for an outage of a power outage in the Ukraine. They probably just looked to the neighbor to the north. how about the analytics side of things? It sounds like we're still quite a ways away from really getting a good, across the city, across function look at the profile of the city and what information can be out there.
I think certainly most cities, and this really parallels what I think many private sector companies are facing themselves, that oftentimes the data may be there. It's a matter, though, of capturing it, processing it, putting it into a usable format for analytics, and then delivering it to leaders in a actionable way. So some of the progress will simply be refining and improving what's already there. Beyond that, though, there will be opportunities to tap into new data streams or create new data streams, combine new data streams. And I think that's where there's a lot of interest down the road. But I think we saw, if you recall, when the buzzword big data first came on the market, there was a lot of excitement. We had some new tools, some new ways to collect data, process it. But I think also, based on some of our research, companies, they quickly found that there's usually a lot that needs to happen to just get their data house in order before they can even begin to take advantage of some of the newer analytic tools or newer approaches to thinking about data. So probably a lot of cities will be in a similar position. It is encouraging, I will say, for the first time, the U.S. has a chief data officer. He's associated with the White House Office of Science and Technology. So, I think hopefully we will see this trickle down where more and more cities, or at least the larger cities, they may have a chief data officer to help really provide the vision and then the execution on some of these opportunities.
And that chief data officer still has to deal with, typical city bureaucracies and cultures. Getting departments to talk to each other and putting data into action in the field.
That is certainly going to be one facet of it. Similar to, again, the private sector, there will inevitably be those that are resistant to making decisions based on data. There will be turf battles, I'm sure, over who owns the data. That's a pretty interesting issue right now, just who owns certain types of data, who has access to it. Hopefully, we will continue to embrace a more open data, at least as it relates to city type of data or government type of data, where there are opportunities for different parties to use it and to build services on top of it. But certainly there will be quite a few hurdles on simply getting everyone on the same page in terms of what are the steps that we need to take to get to where we want to be.
Now, it sounds like most of these applications are prime candidates for the cloud, both in terms of not having to add computing infrastructure internally, but also just in terms of flexibility and data sharing. Is the cloud a primary piece of most strategies right now?
It certainly will be an important component. Depending on the size of the city, a larger city, they may have a hybrid approach where certain types of data reside in the cloud, certain types of data may reside in a data center owned by the city. But think about smaller cities or mid-sized cities that they may not have the depth of expertise. The cloud really enables them to embrace certain types of technologies that would have been out of their reach, say, 5 or 10 years ago. So that's one of the most impressive benefits of cloud technology, that it really is an enabler and it really levels the playing field for small businesses or smaller cities to tap into technology.
Now, speaking of the United States, how does the smart city strategy differ here from what you may be seeing in the developing world, or perhaps in Europe, where some nations have really been pioneers in public infrastructure and public computing?
Yeah. There's really so many potential differences from city to city. Certainly in the United States, we have examples such as Washington, D.C. or New York City, where there may be multiple state jurisdictions, federal jurisdictions, local jurisdictions. Overseas, you may have situations where it's much more of a top-down approach. So there may not be the same requirements to get different levels of government involved. It's essentially a federal or a city leader decision to make things happen. And obviously, there's trade-offs with different approaches. In a number of European cities, when you look at some of the lists, there's a number of groups that put out the top 50 smart cities in the world, or they have some variation of that. You do see many European cities represented. On one list, Stockholm was rated number one. On another one, Oslo was rated in the top five, Copenhagen, Helsinki, Barcelona, London. And one of the big differences when you think about European cities is, one, in many cases, they're much older than many American cities. Oftentimes, they have much greater population density. So they have been forced to think about some of the problems simply because of space constraints much longer than we have had to in the U.S. There are often differences also in energy subsidies. So they may have much higher, say, gasoline prices. So they've had some of these factors in the back of their mind for many, many years now. So that's why in some cases they're probably a little bit further along, because they were able to connect some of these emerging technologies to problems that they have, and we're able to deploy it and go from there. But certainly it does vary quite a bit. I think the other factor that certainly plays into it is the degree to which the citizens are driving it as well. Certainly some cities around the world, often you hear about, say, Seoul, South Korea, or Tokyo, how advanced they are in the area of mobile. And in many cases, they are further along in terms of the adoption of mobile technologies, mobile commerce, applications. And that has had an effect of driving certain smart city investments as well. So some of it is the supply based on the availability of technology, but some of it is also demand-based coming from the citizens.
Now, many of the applications really rip and replace type of things, you know, that obviously can get very expensive, particularly in a densely populated city, or they really just retrofits on existing network and compute infrastructures.
It's really going to be some of both. Certainly, any opportunity to take advantage of, say, a new development. That's the time to be interacting with the developers to ensure that certain types of technology are embedded. It's always more cost-effective to embed the top technology at the initial build and try to retrofit. But there's also many situations where simply that's not an option and it has to be a retrofit. And in some cases, it may be fairly modest. It may be simply adding some additional sensors. It may be adding a mechanism to transmit the data wirelessly. In other cases, if you have to lay fiber or something more significant, if you are replacing, say, a aging sewage treatment plant, obviously that's a pretty massive undertaking.
Now, I know that you looked at the perception of the IoT and how it's changed. What did you find there?
We did find that among government respondents, they are more positive about some of the opportunities associated with IoT today compared to, say, 2 years ago. And I think this is primarily a function of simply there is more information available. There are more examples of smart city technologies that they can turn to and see how that may affect their city in a positive way as well. But generally, that's a fairly common pattern with technologies. The early years, there tends to be a lot of confusion. There may even be negative views of certain technologies. And with additional information, additional examples, usually there is an increase in most cases. I would say, though, we probably have a general increase in positive sentiment, but in some areas there's probably also a corresponding increase in concern, and that's probably around the areas of cybersecurity, data privacy, and some of the other factors that could potentially inhibit adoption.
Tim, will you continue to do this research, year to year, and also where can people get more information on the research that you've done already?
Yes, most of our research we do conduct it on an annual basis, and the trending is usually what is most insightful in terms of gauging how things have changed over time. So we've done 3 years of IoT research. This is our first year of smart cities research, and certainly we will be looking to publish updates to both of these studies in 2017. And CompTIA, we do not charge for our research. We make it available, and you can find it at our website, CompTIA.org, and it's available with a simple email registration.
And if you're if somebody is, let's say, a mid-career, middle-aged person and working in one of these cities now, will they see dramatic change in their lifetime and how the city responds to their needs?
I think over the next 20 to 30 years, we will certainly see some pretty dramatic changes in how we understand traffic flows, pedestrian flows, environmental flows, and other environmental factors. So yes, I certainly think it will affect certain aspects of their job. In some cases, hopefully, it will make it easier for them to do their job more efficiently or more effectively. But we know other elements of their job are not going to go away. There will still be a need to engage with citizens. There will still be a need to think about problems and to connect it to technology. The technology is always only going to be one piece of it. Certainly, there's also the people side of it, the process side of it, and parts of their jobs may look pretty much like they do today. But certainly, over the next 30 years, it will be pretty fascinating to see how this trend unfolds.
Great. Hey, Tim, thanks for the discussion. It's been very informative, and it's kind of fun to look at something like this as, gets technology getting a fresh start or government getting a fresh start and looking at the potential for technology and how it can change our lives. So thank you very much for sharing your experience. Now, as we wrap up the audio portion of our discussion, I invite the audience to stay with us on the live chat on All Analytics. Tim's going to take a couple of minutes. I see there are a few comments on the chat board. So to conclude, I want to thank Tim Herbert of the Industry Association, CompTIA, for being with us and sharing his experience today. And thanks to all of you for joining us and to SAS for sponsoring this event. This has been Jim Connolly for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thanks for tuning in and have a wonderful day.